From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Wednesday, March 11th. I'm Abby Larico. Immigration enforcement has made national headlines in recent months, but some researchers say focusing only on those high-profile actions can obscure what's happening locally.
So I think the thing that we've seen this administration is just a really radical expansion into whole new areas that don't just get up to the line of possibly illegal activity, but seem to run right across it.
What those changes look like on the ground, coming up after this news on The Gateway. St. Louis County voters are closer to deciding the fate of an internet sales tax. Even backers of the idea, though, concede it could be a tough sell. The St. Louis County Council gave initial approval last night to an August ballot proposal instituting what's known as a use tax. The roughly 3.5% tax on online purchases could generate anywhere from $45 million to $75 million a year for cash-strapped St. Louis County. Even though she co-sponsored the proposal, Councilwoman Shalonda Webb of North St. Louis County says residents may not like the idea of having to pay another tax in an uncertain economy.
I think our community members will want to know exactly what this additional tax money that they're going to be paying is going to go towards.
St. Louis County residents voted down a use tax proposal in 2022. The St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department says more than 24 police facilities are in need of repair. This comes amid tense budget negotiations with the city. The buildings will soon be transferred to police control, and both the chief and the Board of Police Commissioners president want the city to hire a third-party contractor to estimate how much the repairs will cost. Meantime, police have submitted a $250 million budget for the next fiscal year, a request Mayor Kara Spencer says would decimate city finances. Chris Saraceno is president of the police board.
It's important for all of us to understand that facility maintenance is a real and measurable cost of operating a modern police department.
Police say they put $25 million in the budget as a placeholder for how much repairs would cost. Legislation to expand the Gateway Arch National Park's boundaries in Illinois has been filed in Congress, and elected officials gathered in East St. Louis Tuesday to celebrate. As St. Louis Public Radio's Will Bauer reports, this is one of the first steps to formalize the idea that's been recently renewed.
The nonprofit Gateway Arch Park Foundation, East St. Louis, and others want the national park grounds to expand across the Mississippi River. While part of the initial 1940s vision, expanding the park into Illinois has never come to fruition. The new bill filed in Congress would amend the current boundaries to include roughly 50 acres in East St. Louis. Ryan McClure is the executive director of the Gateway Arch Park Foundation.
Never have we made such progress on achieving this dream of many civic leaders who have come before us. This is a shining example of collaboration at its best.
The legislation was filed by a bipartisan group from both states, including Democrats Nikki Budzinski and Wesley Bell, and Republicans Mike Bost and Ann Wagner. In East St. Louis, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
The future of congressional redistricting in Missouri was argued before the state Supreme Court yesterday. As St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Kellogg reports, the ruling of this case could change the fate of many other lawsuits over the same issue.
Missouri Solicitor General Luca Posey said the state constitution does require the legislature to redistrict after a census. However, he also said that's all the language does.
It simply says nothing about whether mid-decade redistricting is possible.
Capozzi is representing the state in a lawsuit over the question of whether the state can redistrict beyond each decade. The state argues the Constitution's lack of instruction on the topic gives lawmakers the go-ahead. Meanwhile, those suing over the effort say the language in the Constitution is clear that after the census is the only time when redistricting can occur. If the Supreme Court rules against the state, many other lawsuits, including those over a referendum to overturn the new maps, would be moot. In Jefferson City, I'm Sarah Kellogg, St. Louis Public Radio.
The Missouri legislature has passed a bill that removes legal barriers for pregnant women to get divorced. Members of the Missouri Senate voted unanimously to pass the legislation. Republican Senator Jill Carter spoke on the bill briefly before the vote.
This will allow women in situations where there is violence to be able to get a divorce even though they're pregnant.
Because it has already passed the House and because the Senate did not change it, it now goes to Governor Mike Kehoe. He is expected to sign it into law, as he cited the bill in his State of the State address as something he wanted passed. The legislation made it through the House last year, but didn't pass the Senate. A Missouri House committee approved sweeping criminal justice legislation yesterday that would make it easier for juveniles to be certified as adults. STLPR's Lily Halloran reports it's one step away from Governor Kehoe's desk.
Under the legislation, minors who commit the most serious felonies or who commit three felonies within 6 months could be tried in adult court. Proponents say it would keep teenagers from becoming life criminals. Clifton Davis of the Missouri Justice Coalition was tried as an adult at 16. He told the committee the bill does not support minors.
In the juvenile system, rehabilitation is the status quo. It's encouraged. It's really forced upon you. In the adult system, you have to do it on your own. You have to want it.
The legislation just passed the Senate and may pass the House this week. In Jefferson City, I'm Lily Halloran, St. Louis Public Radio.
Uncle Bill's Pancake House on South Kings Highway is reopening soon. The spot closed in 2024 after more than 60 years serving breakfast and late night crowds. St. Louis Public Radio's Jessica Rogan has details.
The timing was terrible for Ivan Garcia when Uncle Bill's went up for sale. He had just opened Bud's Pizza not long after opening the Golden Hoosier with his brother. But the family behind Garcia Properties didn't want to miss their one shot to own the St. Louis institution. The renovated space has wood paneling, decorative antlers, and a chandelier flown over from England. It feels just like the old Uncle Bill's, but Garcia says it's not.
And it's been interesting to watch people come in and be like, oh, I remember this. And they're remembering things that weren't here. And that's a really good sign to us that it looks and feels like it belongs.
The restaurant is holding a soft opening today. Garcia says they'll announce a grand opening date any day now. I'm Jessica Rogan, St. Louis Public Radio.
The intensity of immigration enforcement efforts, both nationally and in the St. Louis area, has grown under President Donald Trump's second term. St. Louis Public Radio's Brian Munoz has been following this. He spoke with Syracuse University immigration researcher Austin Coker, who is trying to make sense of the agency's operations. The conversation started with asking Coker to explain how enforcement efforts go beyond national headlines.
I think some of the most aggressive immigration enforcement projects in the country in places like Los Angeles, Chicago, Minneapolis, they're really designed to create headlines. They're designed to draw attention. And in some ways, they overshadow and mask the massive amount of immigration enforcement activity across the country in places like the Midwest and in places like St. Louis, where there actually is a lot of immigration enforcement unfolding really rapidly over the last, 12, 13 months of the Trump administration. And so I just think it's really important that even though we need to follow what's happening on the national scale, we also just need to look locally, because it's not only what can we understand about immigration enforcement, it's also what can we do and where can we act. And most of us can't act nationally. We can really only act locally. So understanding what's happening in our local context is in some ways more important than trying to follow every single big headline in the news.
There's a growing number of local municipalities here in Missouri that are signing agreements with ICE called 287G agreements or contracts. Can you explain what those are and what does that mean practically?
Basically, that means that when a sheriff's office or state highway patrol, like it's here in Missouri, or any one of the other, nearly 40 jurisdictions in Missouri sign on to 287G, it means that they are taking on the role in some part of the federal immigration enforcement agencies. It can look a couple different ways. The most concerning and aggressive one, however, and the one that is now dominant across the country, as well as here in Missouri, is the task force model. The reason the task force model is so concerning to many of us is, given the fact that oversight and accountability mechanisms have been all but abolished within the agency to begin with, this most aggressive model of 287G means that if law enforcement officers are out there, there's no guarantee that that state highway patrol officer, sheriff, or cop can do any better of a job than the ICE officer is. And typically those officers will receive much less training even than the ICE officers. And so the concern is, and the evidence is that this can exacerbate community concerns around racial profiling, can lead to unlawful arrests, and for these agencies can generate backlash of lawsuits that can and have cost taxpayers in these jurisdictions a lot of money.
So some people who have been detained in these rural Missouri jails that have the 287G agreements have told me, and immigration advocates have reemphasized, is that they don't feel like the jails were ready for the influx of people that they've experienced in this last year and some change. And that's led to alleged challenges in the conditions there around medical treatment or nutrition or things of that nature. Do you think jails are ready for this moment, or do you think people really didn't expect the level of detention that we're seeing now?
So one of the things we've seen from the start of the Trump administration is the national detained population has gone from less than 40,000 people, which was already really large, to over 70,000 people in just 12 months. We've never seen immigrant detention grow this quickly. We've never seen this many new detention facilities come online across the country. We've never seen this many county jails roped into holding people for the federal government. So I think across the entire country, the immigrant detention infrastructure has ballooned in a way that was very hard to imagine as recently as a year ago. And we've definitely seen the infrastructure struggle to maintain adequate level of care for people in detention.
That was immigration researcher Austin Coker speaking with St. Louis Public Radio's Brian Munoz. You can hear an extended version of their conversation on St. Louis on the Air at noon and 7 p.m. today or online at stlpr.org. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, thanks for listening to The Gateway.